This is Jenny Garth from 90210 OMG. Let's be honest. The 90s gave us some great things. The music? Totally rad. The fashion? So fly. Home decor? That's a different story. In HGTV's new competition series, Totally 90s House, two teams of iconic TV stars take on two homes frozen in time. Paired with HGTV experts, they'll turn dated spaces into fresh, modern homes and compete for the ultimate bragging rights. Goodbye, honey oak cabinets. Hello, 21st century style. Totally 90s House special series premiere starts August 26th at 9, 8 central on HGTV.
They've got something new now. It's called the Press Box.
You're back in the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
One in the books, two to go. Second hour of the show starting right now on the Press Box with Nick Sciarra and myself, Joel Blank, as we hit you with some Astros news from Verbaldez. Looking to improve on a 1-0 record with a 1.64 ERA tonight as he takes on the Red Sox at Fenway Park. Martin Perez is going to pitch for the Red Sox. He of a 309 earned run average and a 4-2 record. Red Sox coming off four straight victories, a sweep of the Yankees, though it might have been umpire aided. I'm not going to get mad at him because of the fact that it aided them in beating the Yankees.
Yeah.
They won last night. I watched part of it against in a makeup game against the Miami Marlins. And now they're back at home tonight to host the Astros in the home and home after they got swept or they lost 3 of 4 here in Houston. Now they're looking for revenge tonight against the Astros. They said Michael Brantley is close.
Yeah, but he's not active today,
no,
right?
Not tonight.
Well, I am more than ready for Michael Brantley to make an appearance. And you know what? I feel really good about this game, Joel. Framber did really well against the Boston Red Sox last time.
Yep.
I feel pretty confident about it.
I don't like when you see a pitcher twice in such a short window of time.
Right. That's the problem. So maybe they can go back and look at his tendencies. But, I mean, he's done really, really well with them. I believe it was what? Only 3 runs earned in 9.2 frames against Boston last week. So, I mean, if he continues similar numbers against this team again, I don't see why the Astros cannot win. Now, obviously, Michael Brantley not being active makes things an issue. But you know what? Kyle Tucker didn't have a bad game against the Red Sox either.
No, and that's your guy.
A bad series, I should say.
No, and that's why I fought so adamantly on the air with you about the fact that he shouldn't have been sitting. And that's why I didn't take kindly when Aaron Rabel decided to chime in that it was because he fouled the ball off his inner knee. He was in the lineup the next day, bright and sunshiny, ready to go. Don't come at me with that BS about fouling a ball off your inner knee. You're 20-some years old.
And I get them describing it as routine rest, and maybe it wasn't. And I also get it if it was some sort of precautionary measure.
Tough it out. Rub some cream on it and get out on the field. Yeah, they need you. You were one of the hottest hitters they had.
Yeah, get some preparation H.
Exactly. Tighten it up.
Tighten it up, homie.
You're looking at to sweep the Red Sox, really adamantly put a stamp on the homestand, and continue the momentum, because you're still not in first place in your own division. You're right there with the A's, but every time you get close, you have one of these hiccups like that last game of the homestand. So, to me, if you were Michael Brantley and you were 30 or pushing later in your career and you needed some days rest, I get it. You're Kyle Tucker. And it's not like you broke a bone or you got hit in the top of the hand like Diaz did or anything like that. You're young and spry, and you had 7 hits in your last 3 games. You should have played.
Yeah, and look, and they might need him to play because apparently Martin Perez, yeah, has been doing pretty well against the Houston Astros as well. So 7.2 shutout innings and was awarded the win to improve his record 4-4-2 after the last time out with the Astros. So, I mean, he's doing well and Framber is doing well. I hope Kyle Tucker and everybody can do well as well up against them.
I feel good, too. I'm with you. I believe in this team, obviously, and I love them. But I believe that this team, I think too many people are sleeping on them right now. I think that they actually could be a lot better record-wise than they even are, even though they're in a good position. Because if we just think about the Padres series, when you lost two of three, but you led in all three games late, and then the bullpen imploded.
Yeah.
Padres are one of the best teams in baseball.
Yeah.
You know, you look at the homestand. You split with the Dodgers. You should have beat the Padres. You almost swept the Red Sox. You're playing the best teams in baseball really, really well. I saw the stat, I think, before the homestand ended, and when they're playing the best teams in baseball, they're like 21-4, 21-5, something like that. Like, their record is really good against good teams. Where they slip up is they got swept by the Tigers. You know, they got swept by the Rangers. You know, I think sometimes they look at the schedule and just assume that they're supposed to steamroll bad teams, and they're not that good yet.
Yeah, and that's really a bad mentality to go into any series, especially if you believe, like, oh, maybe we might lose a game here, but we'll win the series. That's not what you want. You want to get every game, and Dusty's really big on taking each game at a time and making sure you get each dub. Speaking of the Padres, though, did you see how Machado was able to hit a home run after they missed that catch? Or I think it was Hizo who missed that pop fly in foul ball territory. Misses the catch. Really straight.
What, last night?
Yeah.
And well, then Machado, because it happened, and then remember, Machado it happened
hits
here.
A home run. Yeah, and then he hits a home run after the mistake. Oh, my God. That's got to be very frustrating.
Well, but Tatis Jr. did the same thing here.
Well, he's an error king.
Taylor Jones has a chance to end the game with the foul ball right by the Astros dugout, misplays it, drops it, and Presley gives up a three-run bomb to Tatis on the next pitch.
Oh, yeah.
And, okay. And they blow. That's one of the games against the Padres they blew.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like the Padres keep capitalizing on just fluky, fluky luck.
I saw that yesterday, too, on the highlights. I was like, why did you not make that catch, bro? Like, that should have been a straightforward, easy catch, but he missed it. And then Machado capitalized on the mistake. So, super interesting.
It is.
I need to start going out to some of these games, though.
I was going to ask you when you start doing that. But are you concerned at all going, even though as a member of the media, you wouldn't be in the crowd proper? No,
I do not care.
With a full house. I mean, you got your shots, right?
Yeah, I'm vaccinated, and it's been two... What is it, 2 weeks after the second dose?
Yes.
It's been well over 2 weeks.
Now, I'm interested because we had this conversation when everybody was getting vaccinated. I'm interested if anybody else has experienced, because I've had multiple friends and family members that have told me that I'm on to something. But I never get sick, as you know. And I never have allergies or symptoms, even though I've had allergies my whole life. And now, all of a sudden, after getting the vaccine, I have had allergies for, what, three and a half weeks? And it's like congestion. It's like an itchy throat, a tickle in your throat, a cough. And I feel like whatever the vaccine does to fight the virus, it does something else to limit your immune system in some way. Lisa said the same thing. Like four or five of my friends have said the same thing. Barry said the same thing. Like all of a sudden his allergies are on fire and they're never, I go, and we had the same symptoms. And I'm going, man, it's just weird that. And I'm not a doctor, and I don't know the science that's going into these vaccines, but I do think it altered some things.
That's kind of why I was worried about the whole vaccine to begin with. I didn't want to do it. I really didn't want to do it. I just did it because I had to, because of family. But honestly, I didn't really want to do it.
That's right. Your mom was pretty adamant, right?
Yeah, I didn't really want to do it, but I just did it anyway. So it is what it is. It's in me now. No reversing it. We'll see what happens. Well,
don't say that often, okay? So Stros tonight, Red Sox. Nice to have them stay on a roll because they're going to be on the road for a while. So it would be nice to see them continue to play good baseball. And again, the other stat that I think I saw was if the starters give them six innings plus, they're pretty tough to beat. If the starters don't give them six innings plus, they're pretty easy to beat.
Yeah, agreed. And I think that's the big thing with this team. Do you think the Red Sox have any, like, a chip on their shoulder because of the last series? Or this is just
I'm sure they get the red ass a little bit. I mean, they were manhandled in that series. And you know what? Not to take anything away from them, and they did just sweep the Yankees, but the Yankees aren't as good a team as they've been in the past.
No.
And I look at that roster, and I'm not impressed. But that's not a typical Red Sox team that fights tooth and nail with the Yankees for the division, that spends a ton of money, that goes out and looks dominant every single night. Now, they've got players that are playing at an all-time high level, some of them having career years, other guys coming into their own. Verdugo's coming into his own after being the main piece coming back in the Mookie Betts trade. Xander Bogaerts is having a hell of a year. J.D. Martinez having a hell of a year. But overall, the Red Sox team, I look at it, especially from a pitching perspective, and I go, So good for them that they got off to a hot start. Let's see if they can maintain it. But this is a series, I'm like you, this is a series the Astros should come in and win again, because that's the one thing that you can say about this team, whether the bullpen's been bad or not, they find a way to win the series. They lost the Padres series and they split the Dodgers. But other than that, they're winning more series than they're losing. And that's what, at the end of the year, when you look back, that's a big factor in terms of getting where you need to go.
Yeah, and if you really want to be like nitpicky, I mean, there's been times where they won the series, but they lost the last game in the series. And you don't want to do that, but you always want to finish strong. But look, I mean, they're 33-26 right now. The Boston Red Sox are 37-23. I think they'll be fine. I'm not too worried about this Boston. And how many? What is this? This is a road trip of how many games? Is it three?
No, I think it's more that. Well, it started out because remember now that it's already a long road trip because they started with the games in Toronto.
I mean, just particularly for Boston. Yeah, it's three games in Boston.
Yeah, so they played three in Toronto. I mean, Buffalo against Toronto.
Correct.
Then they go right to Boston. They play three more, and I think they have one more. I think they go maybe to Texas on the way
Twins.
Back. Oh, Twins. Okay, there you go. So this is a little bit of a longer one of their. I think this might be their longest road trip of the year.
Well, so, they had a 9-game one not too long ago.
That was the homestand one.
Or no, that was the homestand. Yeah. That was the homestand. So,
and I don't know if you saw this, because look, I enjoyed the hell out of the fact that on Sunday Night Baseball, the Red Sox, it was egregious. Odor was at the plate for the Yankees with first and third down a run, or either tied. It was tied, and the umpire called him out on a called third strike that was about 6 inches off the plate, and they lost their freaking mind. And, you know, of course, all Yankee fans and social media are going crazy and everybody is going nuts. And
it was a really bad call, though. I actually remember seeing it on Twitter. I don't think it was even close.
It wasn't close.
It was not even.
And the Red Sox ended up winning it in extra innings. And the Yankees had a couple of strike calls called on them that were similar to the ball that was called a strike. And they were losing their minds. Then I also saw that, like, Phil Nevin, the ex-Astro, their third base coach, who's coming back from COVID. He's not allowed to coach yet in the third base box, but he was in the dugout. He drops more F-bombs than a street fight, and he gets tossed. Then the camera is on, I think it's their assistant hitting coach, and he's mother-effing and going crazy. And the second base umpire points into the dugout and goes, "You're gone." And he kind of is looking at him like, he's talking to me. And they pull out some scrawny little coach from the back, and they go, "No, not you, him." And they threw the little scrawny guy out, and he knows coming onto the field because he's like, that's like, what, $500, $1,000 that he doesn't want to pay.
Yeah.
He's like, "Me? How'd you get me?" They tossed him because the umpires couldn't see anything that night. So they threw him out. But it's interesting because the Yankees are scuffling. Now, Aaron Boone is on the hot seat. With the call we're talking about, there was a whole bunch of backlash, like, why didn't he get thrown out? Why didn't he come out more adamantly and demonstratively complaining about how bad that call was? He didn't get tossed. And now we've got this Gerrit Cole situation. Gerrit Cole, and it's funny how these guys leave the Astros, Springer, and he hasn't hardly played. Gerrit Cole, and now the whole doctoring the baseball stuff comes up. And the guy that we mentioned first, I think, on this station, when we said Josh Donaldson was ready to pull out his catalog and video clips, and start just calling names and guys that have cheated. Well, he went directly at Gerrit Cole. He basically showed that Gerrit Cole's spin rate went down significantly once the Major League Baseball made the announcement they were cracking down, and then subsequently they caught four minor league pitchers doing it and cracked down on them immediately. All of a sudden, it looks like Gerrit Cole, just like our friend Trevor Bauer, decided, I'm going to ease off on the pine tar for a while. Nick, his spin rate numbers went down so significantly that by over 100 RPMs per fastball, it was 100 RPMs lower spin rate in his last start.
I don't get the substance thing. Just let him use it, man. Are you okay with letting him use it?
I'm not.
No?
I'm not. It's not the way the game was meant to be played.
If everybody is using it, it's not okay. It's not a level playing field.
You know why? Part of the reason why I'm not okay with it, because everybody was cheating with the sign stealing, and the Astros are the only team paying the price. And you and I talked about this yesterday. If you're not doing it hypocritically and you're punishing across the board, then I'm fine with either punishing everybody or leaving it just the way it is.
You do have a point, because I did see a story today, and it says, you know, substance scandal, a baseball doctoring scandal is dwarfing Astros scandal. And I just don't, I just completely disagree with the headline. I think I see what your effort is. I see what you're trying to do there. Maybe you're trying to make it seem like this scandal is dwarfing this. No, but no one's really talking about doctoring the baseball to the point or to the significance or to the level of what the Astros. It hasn't gotten to that point yet. But you are going to see those spin rates change. We talked about Trevor Bauer. Now we're talking about Gerrit Cole. And it's going to be really interesting to see how bad this impacts their career. Now, so in a case like Gerrit Cole, he's already got his contract. He's paid. Right. There's no big deal.
So well, Bauer does too.
And if he starts, yeah. And if they start to suck, that's the problem with baseball. If they start to suck, then you know what you're doing is you're taking a guy that was paid a whole bunch of money by a team, eliminating what he's been able to do, and it's just going to make it a lot worse. I think it hurts the game overall too. It doesn't just hurt that person's career; it hurts the game.
But this is what you're talking. This is why I'm so aggravated about how they're handling this completely differently than they did the sign stealing, because this is the Yankees and the Dodgers, and suddenly you're going to be okay going, you know, paying close attention to those guys. But in the Astros situation, we're not worried about the Red Sox, Yankees, we're not worried about all that. All we're focused on is the Astros, because they admitted they cheated.
You want some consistency, and look, I want some too, and I'm not mad at that. But at some point, you got to wonder, like, and look, the problem is if you change the rules or you enforce something so much that someone that has been deemed a good player just falls off, or someone who really wasn't that good becomes a really good player. It just messes everything up from a financial standpoint. And I'm not mad. I know it sounds like, hey, continue cheating, but you're going to get guys that are going to put substances in their gloves regardless. If they're going to be brazen about it like Bauer has been doing it on the field, or if they're going to do it in the dugout or somewhere where they can't see you, it doesn't really matter. They're still going to use it, and you're not going to be able to monitor every little piece of substance that they put on these balls. I just don't think you can. I think it's just really difficult. And no, they have the best cameras, they have the best angles, and they're still getting away with it.
But the best thing is that I think the thing that every pitcher in baseball who even thought about doing this probably hates the most is spin rate, because it's the easiest way to tell.
To determine.
Because Bauer did it in his last start, and his RPMs went way down. And let me just give you these numbers before we go to break, because it is eye-opening, to say the least. In Cole's last start, the spin rate decreased on all four of his primary pitches. It went down 125 RPMs on his four-seam fastball. Yeah. It went down 78 RPMs on his curve, 77 on his changeup, 48 on his slider. That's not supposed to happen.
Yeah, that's a big difference. If we're talking a nominal drop-off, I'd be okay with it. But that's, like you said, that's a significant drop-off. That's a massive drop-off.
I feel like this is just the beginning. I think that if baseball does this right, we're just scratching the surface on what they're going to try and do with all this cheating with the pitchers.
Well, it's not going to get to the point where, like, okay, they cheated. They don't deserve this World Series. They don't deserve that. Take away this. Strip that. It's not going to be to the level of the Astros scandal. It just won't. Because you're also talking about the defensive side as opposed to the offensive side. You know? The Astros apparently knew what everything was. They knew everything that was coming, apparently, right? Every little pitch, they knew what was coming. And that's how they got the dub, and that's how they got the World Series win. So, I don't know. I would be impressed to see if Major League Baseball makes just as big a deal as this scandal.
Do you want it to happen?
To make it a big deal?
Do you want them to crack down on all these pitchers?
Yeah, kind of. If it helps cheating in general, the integrity of this game has always been questioned from day one, man. And it's always been kind of okay. I've gone back to examples, like as far as to the examples that Charlie Palillo gives, like way back in the early 1900s. That's when cheating was there from day one. So like if it's something that they can do to bring awareness to the point where it really, really hinders a lot of the cheating across the board, both on offense and defense, I'm okay with it. But I just don't see that happening. That's why I kind of want to see the Pintar okay, or provide some sort of substance that's MLB approved, inspect the substances that they're using from time to time. If it's anything different from what they've deemed okay, then serve a fine. But why get rid of Pintar? I don't get it. Why get rid of
it? Because it's an unfair advantage. I mean, some pitchers know how to do it and can master it. Others can't. And it's not the way the game was supposed to be played from the get-go. that's why I would like to see a hard crackdown, because like you said, is it fair that some guys that are doing it are making $300 million and cashing in?
That's the problem. That's
while
the problem.
Some guys that aren't doing it, that maybe felt like if they did, they could have got money too, but they're too honest, their integrity's too deep.
And that's the argument that they're making against the Astros, man. Like players that, you know, pitchers that otherwise are they might be sent down and they haven't been able to get back in the big league since.
Well, but that's also why I wanted to see more than one team crack down if everybody, quote unquote, was doing it. So we got to get to a break. We're going to run late for a break. We'll catch up on that, and then we'll get to a whole bunch of other things. There's some news breaking out of Utah that they're going to be minus a very good player tonight as they open up their series against the Clippers. We've got lots of other things on the agenda, and it all involves you. So stay right where you are. It's Press Box.
When it comes to sports betting, SportsMapBets.com is the site you need. From weekly betting guides to single game breakdowns of the point spread, money line, over under, and more, SportsMapBets has all the info you need to make the best play. SportsMapBets.com. You're listening to The Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
Back on the box, 90, almost 90 in the book. So not there yet, almost to the halftime point of the program as we continue to roll on. Breaking news out of Salt Lake City, Nicholas, and that is that Mike Conley Jr. will not be available tonight for game one for the Jazz at home hosting the Clippers.
That hurts them significantly.
Obviously it's not as bad as losing Donovan Mitchell, but I think when you lose a starter that is experienced, that's a veteran, that brings so much to the table, you want all your hands on deck. Because right now Utah is one of the top three favorites to win the championship with the Lakers out.
Yeah. No, and you know what? I'm kind of worried about it's a weird situation with this Utah Clippers series because I kind of want both teams to win. Now, I obviously hate the Utah fan base, and I normally never root for the Utah Jazz, but they do have good players, and they do have players that are actually likable. Obviously, Donovan Mitchell is a great baller. I like Mike Conley. I think he does great for what they do. Rudy Gobert is obviously a great defensive player, but when you talk about it from a defensive from a storyline standpoint, I mean, wouldn't you want the Phoenix Suns to advance?
Well, they're fun to watch.
Face the Clippers, his old team, and then advance, and then actually go up against the finals
awesome.
And potentially face James Harden.
Would be
like,
awesome.
That would probably be the most ideal storyline. But I will say this. I do kind of like the Utah Jazz in this series. I'm not sure the Clippers are going to get past them. I'm not going to pick them. I want to see some more action from the two, but I just think the Utah Jazz is a very scary matchup for this Clippers team, particularly if Paul George continues to play the way he has been in the playoffs.
And I think the other thing, Nick, is we need to see which Reggie Jackson we're going to get. Rondo, he's finally kind of hit the wall. He's not what he used to be when he's on the floor. And also because the guys don't listen to him. We talked about that. The Lakers would listen to him when he was floor general on the floor. The Clippers don't seem to do that. And as good as Kawhi Leonard has been, he's been all world. Paul George has been, at best, Reggie Jackson stepped up along with Marcus Morris when they needed them. But now you're facing a team, as you mentioned, and it's unfortunate Conley's out because they're as complete and deep and skilled at every position that you need to be going into the second round of the playoffs. So it's going to be a big test for the Clippers. As much as I'd like to see them advance because I'd like to see what they can do and if they really get a chance to actually compete for a title because they've been in hot air on talking about overtaking the Lakers and all that. They've shown me that from the locker room to the coaching staff, I'm not sold. I'm not sold on anyone at point guard. Their forwards are controlling the ball. For the most part, it's either Kawhi or Paul George bringing the ball up the floor because they have deficiencies in the backcourt.
And that's a problem because you kind of need Paul George and Kawhi to play off the ball sometimes. You can't just expect both of those guys to run the offense and have everything run through them. That's going to be troublesome in the postseason if they really want to have success. And then you compile the fact that the Utah Jazz has an unbelievable defense. I mean, it just becomes a problem. Look, I'm not mad regardless. I'm kind of rooting for Chris Paul and the Phoenix Suns anyway. So if the Utah Jazz do indeed beat the Clippers, I'm not mad because I'm kind of rooting for the Suns. I want them to advance. And that's not to say that I don't like anybody else on that opposing team. Like, I like Denver, but I just really want Chris Paul to advance. And then you would assume that in the event he makes it to the finals, that James Harden's hamstring should be ready to go in the event it's like a grade one strain or a tear and it's nothing significant. Because if I'm not mistaken, you said grade two is 4 to 6 weeks, so. which that makes him done. And look, the Nets may not even need James Harden. At the same time, too, do you want James Harden facing the Suns? Because look, Chris Paul has a better chance of winning the championship if James Harden sits down and is not playing or is hurt.
Here's my thing, Nate. And I've periodically taken the temperature of Rockets fans to see how they feel about this. I don't want James Harden winning a ring, and I don't want him winning a ring where he just walks into one because he's got so much talent around him. It's hard to lose.
Well,
and he gets his way, and he gets what he wants. And again, I feel like he used the organization here for 8 years, and then as long as it was good and they did everything he wanted them to do, they did it. That he was okay, and then the minute that it looked like they weren't going to be as good or they weren't going to do it, he wanted out. And I'm tired of that and the super teams and all this other crap, the way it's changed in sports. I would love to see the Phoenix Suns win the title.
I would too.
I'm not going to say I'd love to see this. Dennis Lindsay is a friend of mine. Dennis Lindsay has constructed that Utah Jazz team. I would love to see Dennis Lindsay get extra credit that he deserves for having put together this team and consistently upgraded from the time he got Conley to some of the subtle moves that he's made. Jordan Clarkson was a massive addition that everybody slept on at the time. He just won Sixth Man of the Year. He's made so many good moves for that franchise. By the way, there's a rumor out there that Dennis Lindsay could be very, very fast-tracked to be the new general manager and president of basketball for the Houston Rockets.
Oh, snap. You heard it here first. Joel Blinkers.
So that would be awesome because I love Dennis, and I think he's absolutely fantastic. So I want Dennis to get some credit, but it's the Jazz, so I can't really root for them. So I'm with you. In the West, I'd like to see the Suns. In the East, I'm not a massive Sixers fan. I love the Bucks, but I'm not a believer in them, and I don't think they're going to. I picked them to lose this series, but I just don't want the Nets. I'll take anybody but the Nets to win.
I'm a Hawks fan only because of Capella, but I don't see this team going past the Nets. If they get past the Sixers, which is very possible at this point with the meniscus tear with Joel Embiid and his situation. Look, sorry, even with a healthy Embiid, the Sixers weren't that intimidating to me. I'm sorry.
I'm with you.
They probably were one of the favorites going into the season, and I can understand why just on pure talent and looking at that roster, but they were not that. Who's scared of the Sixers in terms of the top-tier teams? Look, the Hawks might win this series. And look, Capella's not going to get you 20 points every game.
If the Sixers lose game two, I think they do lose this series.
I don't disagree with that.
I told you this. They've got the built-in excuse. They're going to go to the Embiid knee, and I'm not buying it. I'm not buying it because I saw him land. I don't think it's a knee. He had 30-some points. He played his ass off in game one. 39
points, yeah.
Believe me, you can make that all the excuse you want, Daryl and company, but the fact of the matter is you got worked if you lose this series with the position that you have, with the coming into the playoffs, the seed that you have, the home court advantage, playing a team that everybody thinks you're supposed to beat. If you lose this, don't make any excuses. You got it handed to you.
It's funny you mentioned that because Joel Embiid says, I think he's been on record saying it's kind of hard to play on a meniscus tear. I'm like, yeah, I would imagine if that's really, but how do you play on a meniscus tear and score 39 points?
Can you show me replays of where he limped once? I saw him sprinting down the defensive end a couple times, sprinting down on offense. Pretty hard, yeah.
You were going at somebody on Twitch about Luka.
No.
And I got some audio for you on the other side if you want to play it.
Absolutely, because I used it. Because
I think it helps your argument.
Well, then I want to hear it. I used it on both sides of the equation because of the fact that Largo is, and at least we have the dialogue to where I can call him by the right name. Largo is adamant that Curry is nothing more than a good shooter and that he can't carry a team to the playoffs. And he's making a lot of... And then he goes.
I would say that if he couldn't create for himself, but he can create for himself.
He's in the MVP race, and he carried a Golden State team the entire year and put up massive numbers and 40-plus point games on a consistent basis. And you're going to tell me, he's just a shooter.
Come on, son. Be better than that, Largo.
All right, now we're at the midway point. We all need a break. We'll take a break. Back in a couple of minutes. Start the second half of the program. It's the Press Box.
This is ESPN 97.5. Real fun sports. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
So I have to... Everybody gets to a boiling point, Nick, where you just have to cut it off. Whether you say you agree to disagree or for whatever the case it may be, you just have to simply walk away, shake your head, and realize not only did you win the discussion, but some people can't rationally think. And therefore, you just...
Well, sometimes you exhaust all your opinions and thoughts.
Well, I got plenty more, but I pulled a Mark Cuban. I said, and on that note, I'm out. For that reason, I'm out. So there's so much more that I could, just like a deluge that I could come back with right now. I'm not going to do it. So on the point that you were bringing up, so Josh Ennis and I had a back and forth over the weekend because he questioned whether Luka was a true star because he missed a couple of free throws.
Okay.
And I said, come on, bro, please tell me you're just a little late to the party and you're actually talking about Ben Simmons. Because he said, are you really a star? He didn't mention who he was talking about. I was like, because you can't be talking about Luka. And he came back and said, would you want Luka shooting two free throws with the game on the line? And I said, more so than any other player on that roster, I absolutely would.
Well, I mean, I haven't seen him from a shooting percentage, free throw shooting percentage, but I don't think he's a bad free throw shooter at all.
But and I carried it a step further, Nick. When you average 35-plus points a game and you lead your team in almost every offensive category, it's easy to say this team would have maybe gotten swept without him, and therefore he's a star.
Oh, there's no question that he's a star. Plus Shaq, plus all these other players that were absolutely dominant
great
in their
point.
Time.
Great point.
And weren't great free throw shooters.
Giannis
right now is a star. There's no question about it. He's not no star because he's the best player on the team. He's a star because he's a star on his own.
Now, Nicholas, it's one thing that we both agree, which we do from time to time, that Luka's the best player on his team and he's a star, right? I believe personally way too early to say he's the best player in Dallas Mavericks history. Yet if I asked you and others who is the best player in Dallas Mavericks history, you would say?
Normally I would say Dirk.
There you go. So now what if Dirk comes out already and says that Luka's the greatest Maverick of all time? Sounded a little something like this.
What's the best advice you've given to Luka?
I don't think he needs my advice.
Here.
How's it going?
Do you think it's possible he'll ever eclipse you as the greatest Mav of all time?
Oh, he already has.
No way.
You don't think so?
Not yet. No. You're an all-time great.
He's playing unbelievable.
Yeah.
So he says he's already passed. And look, if you're going to go by the number of stats, the years played, you absolutely win that argument. Dirk Nowitzki is without a doubt the best Dallas Maverick of all time. But if you take Dirk Nowitzki in his prime versus Luka in his prime, I'm saying Luka was the better player. Now, you got to remember, Dirk was you just have to give him another 10 years, right?
Dirk win an MVP?
I think so, yeah.
Dirk win an NBA championship?
Absolutely. 10 years ago.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
We're talking about the body of work.
Yeah.
Make him the greatest Maverick of all time.
Right. So if we're talking about the body of work, absolutely Dirk. Like I just said, Dirk is the greatest of all time. But if you're taking just his best year versus Luka's best year, who's better?
I'm still going to say Dirk because he won an MVP.
Really? Offensively?
But he hasn't Luka's won a an better MVP player. Yet. Now, I'm not saying that by the end of this whole discussion, by the end of when all is said and done and Luka retires, he won't become the greatest Maverick of all time. But it's kind of like anointing Patrick Mahomes, the greatest quarterback to ever play the game, when he's got a whole lot more years to play before he starts getting... there's checklists, right? Statistically, when you get to 70,000 yards or whatever, and you start passing the Mannings and the Bradys and the Favres on all these different offensive records, that's one thing. Then you start winning.
But is Patrick the best Kansas City Chief to ever play quarterback?
But we're not even saying playing quarterback. We're saying the best to ever play for the Chiefs.
Well, right. Exactly. So to ever play, it's the best to ever play the Chiefs. Is
he the greatest Chief of all time? I'd have to say right now, no.
Because best Chiefs quarterback of all time.
But that limits it. I'm not saying Dirk's a forward, Luka's a guard, but we're talking about the best Maverick of all time.
Okay, best Chiefs. I still think you can make the argument for Patrick. You don't think so? Even though it's such a short sample size?
Len Dawson early years, even guys like Priest Holmes. But when you look at it, Derek Thomas, you look at some of the guys that have worn a Chiefs uniform over the years, is it fair to say he's closer with the Chiefs than Luka is with the Mavs? Luka right now is probably already on his way to second, but he's not close to Dirk in my mind until he starts career numbers, All-Stars, MVPs, championships. He's got to get all those things. Obviously, Mahomes has already won a title and an MVP, but I just think there's more to do before I'm going to say he. And I got to look at. I'm not a Chiefs expert, but I'd have to look at some.
Well,
of the
I was just
Chiefs
bringing that up as an an example. Let's look at Dirk's best year. His best year as a Dallas Maverick, points wise, was 26.6 points per game, and that was in 2005-06. 4 or 5 years before he won his championship, right? And so if you go to Luka's best year, 19-20, he averaged 28.8 points per game. He's averaging 27.7 points per game. I'm talking about your best year ever versus his best year. Luka's a better player.
You think single season?
If you take Luka's best season, like,
but the game changes.
That's the hypothetical. That's the hypothetical I brought up. Was the
okay?
If you take Luka's best season versus Dirk's best season, Luka's a better player,
in your opinion?
Okay. I mean, 28.8 points per
game. How far did the team go that year? How far did Dirk's team go that year? Yeah. How far did
that was his sophomore year? He was 20 years old.
Dirk
he was 20 years old. No, I'm talking about Luka.
Okay, but. My thing it would be then, too, if it was a great season, then the team did great, too, right?
Yeah.
I don't know what Dirk did that year, and I, you know, we can see what Luka did on his greatest year, but that would factor into
it. That was an amazing year for him. I mean, he played all 81 games, averaged 38 minutes per game, 48% from the field goal range, 40% from three-point range. I mean, the guy had an unbelievable
That's
year.
That's Luka or Dirk?
This is Dirk, 05-06.
Yeah. And I don't know what the team did that year, but you know what? That's why I'm saying. I'm not trying to take any shine off of Luka. I'm just saying, in order to be the greatest player in franchise history, it's body of work. Like, you got to do that for a long time.
Right.
And you got to have individual and team accolades.
And that's why I already answering that particular question, absolutely Dirk. But this guy's already had two seasons that are better than his best season, points-wise.
And so is Mahomes, right? Mahomes has two of the greatest individual seasons in the history of a quarterback, let alone a Kansas City Chiefs quarterback. But
they're both just dynamic players that you don't see every too often, you know?
Yeah, and here's an interesting thing. So Sports Illustrated did this thing, I was Googling it, where they did like the top 10 players in a franchise. They did this one specifically for the NFL, but at least they gave their criteria. Their criteria said in order to make it on the list, the player had to be at the top or near the top of their major statistical categories, which would be, an NBA would be scoring,
rebounds, assists,
all that.
Three-point shooting.
Okay. They have to have accolades that led the NFL at a time. So scoring, assists, rebounds. And I think in the NFL, it's different than the NBA. You're not going to win the individual category. If you're in the top three or four in one or two of them, you're doing your job.
Yeah.
Right? Have impacted the league as a whole by earning a Most Valuable Player award or leading statistical categories several times across the league. Okay. Mahomes has done it. Dirk's done it. Luka's still to do it. But I, there's no doubt in my mind he'll get there, right? And then have impacted the game or the franchise in a way that won games or led to changes to the team or the league or won a title.
I mean, Dirk, look, if you look at Dirk's numbers, and I hate to say it, Houston, you put it up against Hakeem's, you'd be shocked. You'd be shocked. You can make, I mean, look at his numbers. I mean, Dirk was an unbelievable player, but Luka's next level. He's going to be next level. It's just a matter of time. He just has to stay healthy and continue doing what he's doing. He's going to be next level for sure.
Ayat took offense to the fact that we had best Mavericks talk. It's all right. We had Chiefs too. Don't discriminate. Appreciate. Back as we wrap up hour number two of the 3-hour program. Lots more to get to. Ayat wants to keep it local. We can do that too. We can even talk some Texans if you like that. I don't know that anybody would like to do, but we'll give you some information as we continue to roll on. It's Nick. It's Joel. It's the Press Box. ESPN.
This This is Heisman Trophy winner Troy Smith, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5. Go Bucks.
This is the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
Back on the Press Box, it's Nick and myself taking it till 4. We've covered a lot of the local teams today. We've covered Astros. We've covered Rockets. Akeem, if you missed it, is going to represent the team in the draft lottery to try and get lucky and get one of those top four picks. Astros open up a series with Framber Valdez on the mound against the Red Sox tonight at Fenway Park, 6:10 start. Texans news for you, Nick. And this one means that maybe, just maybe, this fan base has finally come to its senses and decided to take matters into their own hands, which is something that we've been suggesting that they do for a long time. We started this on the suspects. We've continued to do this all along, which is if you truly are fed up, if you truly are done with Cal McNair and Jack Easterby and all the crap O'Brien put you through, then put your money in your pocket where your mouth is and don't spend it anymore on merchandise, but more importantly, on tickets. Stop going. Stay away. Send a message.
Hurt their pocket.
Correct. Hammer the pocketbook. Well, Cal better put the controller down and pay close attention to this because Jerome Solomon, I would say our own Jerome Solomon of the Houston Chronicle, that is a frequent contributor to multiple shows on this platform, said that in a matter of weeks, the Texans' season ticket waiting list has gone from 12,734 to eligible to buy season tickets now. That means Lance, I believe, this morning was actually going to try and just sign up real quick, but then he found out you have to buy a PSL, which means they get free money from you per ticket. I think John said it's at least $2,000 that you just have to pay just because. So you have the right to buy, and then you got to buy. Now, I contacted people with the organization that said this is the first year that they will actually be trying to sell group tickets. That's the first sign that you can't sell out.
100%. People are turned off, and nobody wants to see this. And the other thing about it, like, you have to understand, it's not going to be easy for this fan base to just move on from Deshaun Watson, despite the fact that he has all these allegations against him because of the impact he's had as a quarterback, and because you can make the argument that this team has never really seen a good quarterback. If you want to get into the discussion about Matt Schaub and all that other stuff, I don't really want to do that. I'm just saying, when Deshaun Watson landed here in Houston, when he was drafted, it changed the world. So it's not a situation where you can motivate people and give them an incentive to come back and tailgate and watch the team just because you're allowing group prices or there's more tickets available. No, that's a bad look. People are going to jump off. I will say this. I did speak to a buddy of mine by the name of Derek, and he said, you know what? I'm not going to lie. I've been so turned off by this team. I was shocked that the season tickets became available. So when I got that email, I'm not going to lie, man, I went ahead and bought them anyway. But that was 2 or 3 weeks ago. But he's been regretting it ever since. So look, the team is turned off, and I'm not shocked. Shocked at all.
I think it's a bad investment, too, simply because it used to be, because of the waiting list and the demand, that people couldn't get to games when they wanted to. So this is frequent in across the board, even with Rockets and Astros, who have a lot more games and a lot more seats. But this is where they had to start limiting individuals and how many season tickets you could buy, because on the open market, you could buy season tickets in the past for the Texans, whether they were good or not.
Right.
And you could sell them on a game-by-game basis and make a profit on every single game. This year, it could be a loss.
How are you going to flip those now?
Because we know they're going to be bad. Two, there's the 70,000 seats. And we know that there's no waiting list, so they might not even sell them all to begin with.
Yeah, I know. It's going to be tough. I think scalpers, too, like all those people outside, they're going to struggle, too.
That's what I'm talking about. Because you know that, so like, have you seen that, what's the name of the ticket joint right down there between Minute Maid and the Toyota Center?
You're not talking StubHub, are you?
Yeah, no. But there was Ticket Exchange, I think it's called.
Oh, okay.
Okay? He's kind of the reason why the Rockets made a rule you can only buy so many season tickets, because he would go in and buy like 50 to 75 season tickets and then just keep them on file, turn around, and he didn't have to sell all of them for every game, because every game that he sold, whatever tickets he sold them at such a high markup
that he got most of his money,
made all his money back.
All of it back. Yeah. Yep. Damn.
And so Jerome,
I need to start selling tickets.
It might not be, I might get in there with you. So Jerome went right for the exact blame for this too. He said, hell would freeze over before I'd spend a nickel on Texans tickets this year. But he doesn't blame the current players, the team, or Deshaun Watson's legal issues for the predicament. He said the ineptitude starts at the top. This is why I couldn't find a reason to justify spending on tickets. Now, it depends on how you want to go, because some people, Cal is the ire of all of their disdain. Some people, the whole Jack Easterby thing that people have forgotten, he hasn't gone away. He's still there.
Yeah. No, so, they have it. I can't even, I don't understand how he walks in the city.
I don't either. I have no freaking clue how that guy still has a job.
Does he do curbside? He's got to do curbside, HEB curbside.
Has to. He needs new brakes, too. He needs everybody to come to him and keep him out of the public eye, because, like I told you, and this is where Charlie got his feelings hurt, because he doesn't like violence. But I'm telling you, for as bad as Bill O'Brien was, right now, it would be a crapshoot. And I might think that Easterby actually might overtake O'Brien. But if both of them walked into a crowded HEB on a night where there were a lot of people that had been drinking, I would tend to believe it's a 50-50 crapshoot. Who's getting punched first and who's getting attacked verbally, O'Brien or Easterby?
Probably, I'm gonna say Bill O'Brien.
I kind of am too, but I think that it's always the Janet Jackson philosophy of "What have you done for me lately?" All the most recent egregious behaviors have come from Easterby. But I would think that just from the full body of work, Bill O'Brien should get punched first. But I think that there's a large contingent that's going right for one fish, two fish.
No, I can't agree more. I think we have to talk about another quarterback and another team in the Green Bay Packers, because that's clearly a national story, because Aaron Rodgers didn't show up, costing himself $93,000.
Not necessarily.
And did you see the tweet? I guess they're trolling or... But apparently Jordan Love didn't look good in the OTAs, and he's like overthrowing passes to like wide open people. Did you see all that?
No.
So it's just feeding that whole narrative, like, oh, you really need me. You really need me. I'm Aaron Rodgers. And the Packers, are you getting upset? Are you getting upset? Did you see the overthrown pass by Jordan Love?
I didn't.
Does it make you worry?
I have no confidence in Jordan Love.
Nobody should. No. Neither should have the
Do
Packers.
You know what Greeny said? It's the Summer of Love tour, because Jordan Love is that quarterback. Mike Greenberg is a complete D-bag on all this stuff. He found a way again. Now, again.
It was too easy to mess with you.
By the way, for the record, Nick brought it up. Did anyone think he was showing up? To your point, he hasn't been fined anything yet. The Packers are deciding whether they will waive the fines. And what I think they're going to do is, they're going to hold off until they find out what his final is, and then hit him with the fines if he...
Right, because they need to see him make a move first at this point. Because it's kind of, are you bluffing or are you not? You know, what are you doing?
But remember what we said with Deshaun, what I said to you a few weeks ago? He's got to show and be told to go home so that he gets paid. At some point... I'm not worried about Rodgers I'm not even worried after training camp starts, but ideally for the success of the team, I'd like this to be resolved before training camp starts. But for everybody losing their mind because he didn't show today, there's plenty of guys that do this all the time.
It's still $93,000.
No, it's not, because again, it's up to the team. They can waive it or they can
delay
it.
But if they don't waive it, I mean, that's a lot
of
preparation.
How much money he's got? Well, then you got crow's feet and you still got plenty in the bank.
He don't get
and you got, a Hollywood fiance, and you got trips to Hawaii. You're fine. And the Kentucky Derby.
I don't think they even find him, even if he doesn't like play for them, which I think that's a long
story. It's just not. Now, they also said they're going to make one final run at it, where they're all going to go to California and try and sway him. Let Matt LaFleur go, because they're good. Keep the other two complete schmucks away from Aaron Rodgers. He hates both of them. Mark Murphy, the president, Brian Gutekunst, the GM. Just send them on a bus ride to, like, Janesville. Leave them out of it. Let's get this thing done. All right, 2 hours in the books, 1 hour to go. Final hour of the show. By the way, Nick brought that up again for the record. Final hour of the program coming up next, Press Box ESPN.
Years of research and innovation.
Innovation Map is the new voice of innovation in Houston.
Pretty cool, huh, Morty?
Covering startups, tech, energy, health, social impact, and more. Visit innovationmap.com today.
Do it now! Do it! Do it! Do it now!